KPBS On Demand is supported by Paint Care, offering households and businesses in California more than 800 leftover paint drop-off sites for recycling. Quantities of 100-plus gallons of paint may qualify for a large volume pickup. Learn more at paintcare.org.
Welcome in, San Diego. It's Jade Hindman. Sports are for everyone, no matter what your ability is. So today, we're going to tell you about a couple of inclusive programs right here in town. This is KPBS Midday Edition, connecting our communities through conversation. Here in San Diego, we know a thing or two about skateboarding. Skate legends like Tony Hawk, Willie Santos, and Patty McGee grew up right here. Plus, a new generation of San Diego skaters just made their Olympics debut in Paris. But did you know that San Diego State University has a whole research center for skateboarding, action sports, and social change? Well, they do, and they're now partnering with Tony Hawk's nonprofit, The Skate Park Project, bringing skating to low-income communities. Joining me now to talk about it is Neftali Williams. He's the director for San Diego State University's Center for Skateboarding, Action Sports, and Social Change, also assistant professor of sociology at SDSU. Professor, welcome back to Midday Edition.
Thank you very much. Honored to be here again.
You hold a doctorate in this stuff.
Yes.
What is it specifically? Because I'm sure there are a lot of people who might be interested in pursuing something like your career.
Oh, thank you for asking. So my degree in particular is in sociology of sport. And that's really understanding the nuances of what, for me, skateboarding means to the culture, how the culture itself of skateboarding has evolved, and what does it do and how does it connect to larger things that are going on in our lives.
Very interesting. Well, you know, congrats on this exciting initiative.
Thank you.
Tell me, how will partnering with the Skate Park Project advance your mission here?
The truth is, Tony is just the ambassador for skateboarding, has been the ambassador for so long, and the work that TSP does, making sure that kids in low-income communities can be skateboarding and have access to skateboarding, they're just really the leaders in the field. And so one of the things that it does for us is it adds another level of connection and legitimacy to the work that we're doing. And we were already doing research work and sort of partnering with them on small things, but now to be an official partner where we're working towards all kinds of new research together. One of the first things that we'd done before was thinking and finding out how skate parks brought kids together from all kinds of diverse communities. Now, previously, of course, the Skate Park Project has been doing the work for 20 years, and they had lots of, you know, personal anecdotes about how skateboarding was helping people, you know, build community and work towards a future. But what we added to them is the research element to actually go like, here's the qualitative and quantitative results, the actual evidence to show this is what skateboarding does. And so this partnership just really deepens that and allows them to have more ammunition in getting skate spots and skate parks built, and actually to help all of us who are skaters, like myself, to see that skateboarding and action sports belong in academia, because not every kid is going to want to be a pro skater or have the ability to be a pro skater. But now they can think about how they can contribute to skateboarding culture through their work at the university, through design, engineering, all those things that we do well as a university. Now we're creating that entryway for young skaters to see themselves in multiple lanes, not just pursuing a pro career.
Wow. Well, we got to dig into what skateboarding does for a community. But before we do, everyone in the studio, our producer, our technical director, they want to know, have you met Tony Hawk?
Yes. Yes, I've met Tony, and I'm actually on the board now for TSP, which is the Skate Park Project. And so I work with him. I see him, you know, pretty regularly. But I will tell everyone that I am still always in awe every time I see him. So he'll hear this and he'll laugh, but it is the case. Even when we're in Paris for the Olympics, he was there in the Olympics, and we caught up quickly with him and his wife and kids. But it is still, you know, I pinch myself all the time to go, I can't believe I've done the work to be in the same space as, you know, our greatest spokesperson. It's a thrill every single time.
That's awesome. Well, one thing that is so powerful about skateboarding is its ability to bring people together, regardless of socioeconomic status. How is your center honoring that?
Well, one of the ways that we're looking at it is understanding, since so many people can be together through skateboarding, it's like, well, we need to dive deeper into that research and create more opportunities for that to happen. So the way, you know, listeners might be thinking is, oh, does that mean more skate parks? That is great, of course, but we're focused on thinking through how do we make San Diego be a better, more sustainable, more community with more social cohesion? And the way that we look at that is thinking, why don't we do smaller things like which we're going to pilot at SDSU, like skate spots and skatable sculptures? Now, the way to think about that, I'm sure your listeners are skatable sculptures.
Yeah, I was going to ask,
right,
what is that?
Right, what does that mean? What we want to do is think about ways in which we know that skateboarding at the skate park brings intergenerational learning. From age 8 to 80, everybody can be using the space and learning how to share the space, learn how to interact with each other. First of all, that's what we want to happen everywhere, right? So why is that magic only happening at the skate park? How do we take these things that are happening there and put them out for the general populace? So one of the ways there is to design art and architecture that is skatable, but also can be multi-use and multifunction, right? It can serve as a bench. It can serve as a play area for kids who aren't skating. It can serve as art for those who are just being observers. So when we create things like that, then everyone is learning how to share the space together to go like, oh, I thought this was, let's say, like a pyramid. I thought this was a piece of art, but it can be skatable. First of all, as a city, we have limited resources, right? So we can't always just design giant playgrounds for everyone, for every sport, for basketball, for football. We just don't have it. So the best way to think about sustainably is how do we get people to do more together and to understand each other in that space? And what I mean by that is if everyone is within, let's say, you know, a size of the space of just a few rooms, right? But if everyone is there, and some people are watching people skate, some are just observing the art. Well, what happens is there's greater understanding between each other. Because now, I'm sure you have lots of listeners who are going to say, you know, like, oh, I almost got hit by a skateboarder, or like, I don't like skateboarding, they're like this. One of the main things is they're saying they are like this. And that's how we label the other. And what we need is more spaces for people to go like, actually, I understand exactly what's happening. I see that they're here. They're sharing the space together. They're sharing the space with me. And again, that 8 to 80 that can be using that space or learning to enjoy that space together, that creates a greater understanding, right? That's sort of the key thing. The skate park lets it happen when they're skating. But now people can also, who are non-skaters, go, oh, this is a beautiful space. This is a beautiful art, but it's serving multifunction. And they feel more connected.
Sure. Okay, so you mentioned pyramid. But
oh, yeah.
Describe for me what this skatable art might look like. Give me an example. Paint the picture for me.
Oh, it's so funny. So I just got back from a conference that was in Bordeaux. This movement is happening all over the world. People are literally just working with artists. Some I've seen some that are the shape of like interconnected hands together to do an actual handshake so that people are looking at the sculpture that says we should be together, and then they can enjoy it in multiple facets in multiple ways. So that's just one example. But for any of the artists that are listening to this piece later, we are looking for artists who want to work with metal or concrete or other sustainable materials. So those are the things that are the future. And doing it at SDSU means we have the students who are building the future right now. And so it also allows those students to go, oh, I like to skate, but I'm not trying to be a pro skater, but I would love to design art or get into architecture and design to think about something that could be beautiful, but also serve multiple functions. I want you to be able to sit on it. I want you to be able to skate it. I want you to see things as an object of art that everyone can appreciate. And that really will build a better community where more people see each other and understand like, oh, this does multiple things. That's what the community should be engaging multiple people.
Any other cool projects or partnerships you're working on in the world of action sports?
Well, one, we do a lot with Burton and with Red Bull. In particular, with Burton, there's a project called Culture Shifters that's led by Zeb Powell, who is absolutely amazing, African-American snowboarder who is just, you know, setting the world on fire. He just did a new deal with Jordan the other day. And Salema Masekela, who is VP for Culture for the X Games. So Culture Shifters is there to help get more underrepresented communities on the mountains and to understand that, wow, everybody should be out enjoying snowboarding, enjoying the outdoors, and everyone should have a path towards that. So we're working with them. We're working in surfing as well. So there's so many good projects that are on their way.
All right. Well, you study the social dynamics at play within skate culture. What social divides are highlighted by skateboarding and action sports?
Oh, well, one of the things that's great is because so many different people can see and have a shared experience through skateboarding, it allows us to now have that first entry point for every diverse community, every particular background can now have a reason to engage with each other. So if we're asking like, hey, can you solve and connect disparate communities? The answer is yes, because that is every space getting the ability to love skateboarding, learn to skate together. And it doesn't matter if you have a lot of money, a little money, or wherever you are, that you have one shared love. And so that's what skateboarding provides, that opportunity. Now, what I will say is, our job as researchers and as adults and as community leaders to foster this space where young people can recognize the humanity in each other. And so we need to build more opportunities for that, and not just for the young people to do it, but for us to also as adults go, they're doing something special here. Maybe we need to foster some more social change and a little bit more connectivity outside of skateboarding. So I look at this as just the sort of the pilot project, right? We take care of the youth, but really we're just taking care of ourselves. We want them to be the best versions of us. So we should have less ways in which we feel disconnected. We should be working at every instance to build more connections.
You know, I'm curious how the current political environment is affecting your work, both at the Center for Skateboarding and as a professor of sociology.
I would say that right now my focus has always been the same thing. Skaters are marginalized at all points, right? We look at football, football is, it's great at SDSU, at basketball. All of these young people do not have the opportunity to be seen in the same light as other students. And so right now, it's a really interesting time to be able to think about who isn't seen and why are they not being seen? And if that's happening to the general populace, how can we take what we're doing in skateboarding and make that a way for everyone to be seen? Because the truth is, skaters have so many different backgrounds. My job is to make sure that they are seen, respected, and have a place at the table. And so naturally, all of their other identities that they bring come to the table as well. And I think that that is really great. I mean, just in particular, there's such a rich history of diverse skaters over time. However, a lot of folks don't know that. And my research, in particular, the new book that is coming out called The Skateboard Life, that really highlights the fact that there are so many skaters with so much history in the United States. But that's why skateboarding is global, is because everyone, Asian American, LGBTQ skaters, women, everyone has a history within skateboarding. And we need more things and more activities where we embrace those unique histories so that everyone can feel connected.
You just dropped something I didn't know about, a book. What?
Yes. So I have a new book that will be coming out. I'll have to ask the publisher, but I believe our drop date is September 30th, and that's called The Skateboard Life. And then in particular, it talks about generations of skateboarding and skateboarders who've been the movers and shakers, the people behind the scenes who've made skateboarding be this like rich tapestry, this rich history that it has. And it really is something where you'll look at it and go, there's somebody here who looks like me, who has a history or experience that's like me. And that is what we don't have enough of. It also really makes me think, like, that's the difference between skateboarding and other sports, is the fact that in skateboarding, everyone has been building this history and this culture together. And so from Daewon Song, right, we have Asian American skaters, Marty Grimes, our first African American pro skater, Stephanie Pearson, first African American woman pro skater. Like the list just goes on and on. And that is special and unique because no one can tell you that you are not a skateboarder. It's a thing that you decide yourself. If you feel it and you are putting the effort in, well, then you are it. And in a world where people are constantly saying, don't do this or you can't do that, or we're not acknowledging who you are or what's going on,
mm-hmm.
No. You acknowledge yourself as being a skateboarder, and that is enough for me.
That's it. Well, I mean, you got the book. I mean, you're a very busy person here. And last summer, you were the first ambassador of skateboarding and envoy for the U.S. Department mm-hmm. of State at the Paris Olympics. So what's it been like to see skateboarding grow on the Olympic stage?
It's amazing. And, you know, I know there are skaters who originally were, like, very nervous about it. And they're saying, like, oh, well, now it's going to make it more corporate, or it'll sort of— the term that's used in academic circles is sportify, right? We've turned it into this other thing. But what I knew then, and I still know now, is that skaters are not going to stop being themselves. They bring all of their histories to the stage. And some skaters use it. They were just skateboarding the best that they could. But some used it also as a side of protest or activism. And it will continue to be a space where skaters are using the platform to be the best that they can be. And one of the ways that I think that it was really, really powerful for those who are afraid, like, oh, maybe it's losing, as they like to say, it's losing its edge, but it's not losing its edge. It was watching the young skaters take all of their medals and their photos together. And what it was doing was actually teaching the Olympics and other sports how they could be more connected. When you see skaters are clapping for people from Japan, right? Japan was crushing at the Olympics. The U.S. crushed it at the Olympics. Brazil's crushed it at the Olympics. That's a genuine love for each other and celebrating everything new and unique that goes on. And I'm sure you know when you watch, you know, unfortunately, sometimes when you're watching other sports, there's the pressure from the nation to be the best. And if you don't perform, you know, your nation is upset with you, or there's just so many things that there's other pressures that keep it from just being a great time. And what happens in skateboarding, it is still, while the Olympic stage, it is still skaters getting together, enjoying and reveling in the fact that, like, hey, we are here, but I loved you yesterday, I'm going to love you tomorrow, and they're going to still skate together. And that's something that we want all our children to understand, to, like, be the best you can be, but also still have a love for the other people that are participating in. There's just so much for us to learn from skateboarding on so many different levels.
Yeah. What are you excited about as you look at the future of skateboarding in our region?
Well, I will say I'm excited about the work we're doing at the center, and the way for people to think about how skateboarding is, one, getting kids active. And again, when I say kids, that's all ages for everyone to be active. Okay. I say 8 to 80. That's one of the things that is happening, is everyone from every age group is now participating and seeing that. Oh, it isn't just for kids, it's actually for me. So I'm excited for more people to see that, and for more people to understand that their kids can see the university as a place for them, and that their skateboarding identity is something that will help them get into architecture, design, entrepreneurship, or to just be the community leaders that they might want to be. So there's a lot to look forward to.
I've been speaking with Naftali Williams. He's an assistant professor of sociology at SDSU and director of the Center for Skateboarding, Action Sports, and Social Change. Professor Williams, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Coming up next on Midday Edition, how one local organization is offering walking soccer and making the sport accessible to all.
Provide programs for everybody, you know, regardless of your age or who you are or your mobility issues. We believe that there's a pathway for somebody, for everybody.
That's next on KPBS Midday Edition.
KPBS On Demand is supported by the San Diego County Toyota Dealers, offering a new 2025 lineup of vehicles at your local Toyota dealer, including a new Tacoma with turbocharged four-cylinder engines and a hybrid powertrain option. The San Diego County Toyota Dealers. We make it easy.
Welcome back to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. Sports are great for our physical health, but as we age and battle injuries, accessing what once came easy can sometimes be a challenge. Well, one local organization is looking to open up soccer for people with a wide range of physical abilities, and particularly middle-aged and senior women. Last week, KPBS Metro reporter Andrew Bowen talked with the co-founders of the organization Kicks and Giggles, Basma Oshiba and Chelsea Scholes. Here's that conversation.
First of all, how did you all get into soccer? What drew you to this sport? Basma, I'll start with you.
Well, I played when I was in high school years ago, and I wouldn't say I was the best player, but I always liked it playing in a social aspect. And when I met Chelsea, she played more in a competitive high level. And I played on her team, and she kicked me off her team, seeing how well I was.
Wait. She kicked you off the team? Explain what happened.
She told me to come sub for her because she had to go coach the club she was at. And so I subbed in for her, and she showed up at halftime. And she saw how I was doing and called the ref sub and pulled me right out.
Okay. Well, how about you, Chelsea? What got you into soccer?
Well, I actually grew up just in diapers, you know. I'm from Manchester, so it's in our blood, soccer. So, well, we call it football over there. So, yeah, so I grew up from such a young age watching it with my grandparents, and it just went from there. And then I just always had a ball stuck to my foot. And then here I am. I came out here at 24 to coach the soccer. And never looked back.
And I have to ask about the name of this organization, Kicks and Giggles. So who came up with it and what's the story there?
Together. We watched dogs on the side and we were walking one of the dogs.
Uh-huh. And we was trying to come up with names, and we knew we wanted it to be fun because that's who we're about. You know, we want to be educational and it'd be fun. So we was coming up with names like Laughing, Sharpshooters, I think was another name we came up, and then Giggles. I'm like, it's got to be something with giggles. And literally as we're saying that, the dog that we're looking after starts to goes to potty and does a big dump. So we're like, oh my God.
The famous phrase.
And with the famous phrase. So we put them in like Kicks and Giggles, and it just stuck from there. So it's a great story.
Right. A phrase that's not safe for radio.
Exactly.
But Kicks and Giggles is perfectly family friendly. I see. And so what is the goal of this organization? And tell me about the kinds of programmings that you offer.
Yeah, well, we just want to be available. We think that soccer is for everybody, and we really want to focus on that and provide programs for everybody, regardless of your age or who you are or your mobility issues. We believe that there's a pathway for somebody, for everybody.
Our focus was to really make it fun. We want to make sure people are having fun playing soccer. Chelsea used to coach at different clubs, and that's something she noticed that was removed from the sport.
Yeah, the fun was just taken out of it. Like I felt like children wasn't able to express themselves because they was too scared to make a mistake. Because you were just hearing the coaches screaming at them when, especially at the higher level you get, and I just didn't like that. And I think I found myself becoming that person, and I put an end to it. And that's when we came up with the idea of creating Kicks and Giggles, to make sure that wouldn't happen. So our programs, we encourage people to make mistakes so then they can develop their own individual personalities and grow as a player. And it is okay to make mistakes. We're human.
And we tease everybody in a fun way on the field.
Yeah.
And they like it. They tease right back and they take it. So it's a good community environment.
Yeah.
And you've got programs for different ability levels, and one of them is walking soccer.
Yes.
This is something that's new to me. So tell me about walking soccer and how you play it.
All right. Well, the idea of walking soccer is really to provide a slower version of the modern game that you see played today. So it can accommodate for people who, they might have maybe just trying out the sport for the first time, or maybe they have an injury that they're coming out of and they want to get back into playing again. Or maybe they have mobility issues as well. So then they just want to just come out and just enjoy the game, at a much more relaxed social environment. So that is basically what walking soccer is.
And if you break into a run, is that against the rules?
Or? Exactly,
it is.
Yes.
Okay. That is one of the biggest rules.
The biggest rule, yeah, is obviously it's walking soccer, so you cannot run. And what determines what's a run and what's not? I mean, we all saw the Olympics, right? Speed walking, yeah. Right?
And Chelsea, tell us about some of the other programs and why it's important to offer soccer that's inclusive of women of all ages.
Yeah, we have several programs, and I think it's important just for people to just come and learn and have just such a great side. I think one of the big things that we encourage is the social side of it, right?
And we realize a lot of the women that they go into this tournament, soccer, they sign up for soccer tournaments, but they've never had any proper training. We're never their coach at the games. We're more of the training program for them to get ready for their game or their tournament or whatever it is that they're trying to get prepared for. Our walking soccer program is co-ed, so we have a lot of husbands and wives that come together, or a father, daughter. Some people bring their moms or their grandma with them. So it becomes more of a family community, and no one's left behind.
And you also have offerings for kids and teenagers. It's not just for older people. Tell me about those.
Yeah, well, the youngest client we actually have, I think, is 2 years old. And the oldest, are you ready for this? The oldest is 83 years old. And we have two of them, I think, right?
Wow.
Two are 83 years old and one that's 80. And, you know, so it's a big difference, right?
It is.
And what sets your organization apart from the dozens of other youth soccer clubs and adult leagues in the San Diego area?
I think it's fun. This is a great place to come and just enjoy, let your hair down. There's no stresses with it, right? And everything's educational. Like, they want to learn, they come. It's weekly. They don't have to commit to things, you know? So we understand life happens, or, you know, maybe you just want to come once a month, and that's fine, I think. Other companies, they might have maybe a contract to buy into. Essentially, we want to be known as the Costco of soccer. We want to be cheap, affordable, but it's great quality.
And Basma, what would you say the current soccer scene is like in San Diego? Obviously, we have an MLS team now. We have a women's soccer team that's very famous. How would you say this sport is evolving here?
It's definitely growing. Actually, some of our players, we've met them at the games that they've never played. They just know the rules of it. And we'll sit with them and we'll say, well, why don't you play? And they're like, well, we've never played. We're in our 50s, 60s, and we've never touched a ball. And that's how we've encouraged them to come. Try it. Try it for free if you want. See if you like it. And they now, when they go to the games, they understand it a little better. So I think that's the other part of learning the sport. It's not just playing, but also learning why the professionals are playing the way they play.
Chelsea, any thoughts on the culture of soccer in San Diego, how it's evolving?
Oh, I think it's evolved. I've been, I think, in this country now for 14 years, and it's like night and day now how much it's involved. It's great to see, you know, you've got young girls on the field playing. We was at the park the other day by the Snapdragon Stadium, and you've got the little babies running around with a soccer ball. I think it's just amazing how we've not only got the women's wave team, we've also now got an MLS team. So it's just great to see the progress that especially San Diego has, I think, has come a long way. So, and it's great, and it's really good to see. And I think it's only going to get better and better.
One of you mentioned you wanted to keep this program affordable. You might need staff, you might need insurance. What do you charge for your programs, and how do you try and keep it accessible for folks?
For all the adults, we charge $15 per class, and the kids, it's $20 per class. But we tell everybody, if you can't afford it, don't make that the reason why you're not coming to our classes. Tell us, we'll come up with a plan, whether you're free or you pay every other class. If you bring a friend, you'll be free. We provide siblings discount. So it all varies from case to case for each family. We never let any player that tells us, hey, I can't come because you can't afford it. I'm like, well, just come.
And sport is not just about physical activity and exercise. It's about building community. Can you talk to me about how this organization is doing that?
Remember when we first started Basma, we just had like a handful of people there, and, you know, people were so nervous, they were shy, they didn't want to come. And I just think it's almost been a year now, right? And it's just been nice just to see, like you said, we have a mother, a husband, a wife, a mother, like just families just come out and just come enjoy it. And, you know, not only that, they've made it such a social event as well, where afterwards we go for 90 minutes and you'd think they'd be fed up of us. But when they don't, they sit, we take off our shoes, we do a bit of earthing, grounding, and Yeah, we just make it a day, just chat for 30 minutes or so afterwards as a group. And I think that speaks volumes at all. It's not forced upon them. They actually genuinely want to be there.
In fact, when we had to, we took some time off for ourselves a week to take our own time vacation. And they sent us a photo that they still got together and played. That's how much that we built like this community, this family. That they still want to get together and play together and be social. Because that's something we found with the seniors is they're quite lonely when they're retired and they're at home and they have nothing to do. Yeah. So they look forward to our Sundays.
Yes.
And have you seen couples come together through this sport or any stories you can share about the relationships that you've seen build, you know, through this sport?
There's a really cute story, and I'll try and do the best I can without dropping names. But I believe they used to be together. They've got children together. And then I think they went their separate ways. And then it was the wife who joined our women's class, right? And then the husband heard about the program, even though they wasn't together anymore. And they came back. So anyway, they've been playing in the co-ed walking soccer together. And then we could just see their romance was blossoming again. And oh, it was such an amazing thing to see. And even though they haven't admitted it yet, I really think there's something's been rekindled there, and it is just beautiful to see.
Oh, that's so nice. And how have you both strengthened your own connection to the soccer community through your organization, Kicks and Giggles?
I think we've just learned more, more in depth about it. It's not just a sport. It's more of a family. It's not just an organization. I think just getting to know people on a more personal understanding is one thing that I think I've seen. What about you, Basma?
We don't only see them that weekly class. We have a group chat that we're all in it together. If we see something funny, we will send a photo, or somebody saw one of our Kicks and Giggles signs at Costco and they're like, oh, look, I saw your sign. And then they sent us a photo of it. So we kind of keep it where we're not just a company that is just going to take your money and just do the classes.
We genuinely care.
We do care about you guys, all our customers. And we check on them, and They do the same right back with us. Me and Chelsea, we're here in San Diego on our own. We don't really have any family. So we like that we've built this family. And we did last December, we did a get-together at the Bay picnic, a potluck picnic.
We didn't think we'd have anyone turn up. We just started the walking soccer program, right? We'd not long been there.
And all these people showed up with lots of stuff that they've cooked, homemade meals. And it's something that me and her have missed a lot. And until today, they're asking, when can we do this next potluck at the Bay? And we just put a couple goals up, and they played. They brought their kids, their families, whoever that they wanted, and everybody kind of just clicked around and ate. And it was only supposed to be for 3 hours. We ended up staying and bonfiring.
We ended up bonfiring to the sunset. It was super nice, and it blew me away because I just didn't expect it either. And it just felt nice, yeah.
What are some of the challenges you've encountered as you've been leading this club?
It's probably the same challenge most clubs face. It's the field space. There's not enough land or grass space for everybody to use.
That has been the most actually frustrating thing because, you know, we see that there's grass available. And, for example, I work at a school in La Mesa, and we go to use their grass. I put on a free class, I think, for the people at school. And then we was asked the following week that we couldn't come back because it was rented, even though the field was open, though. No one was actually using that space. But because someone, another soccer organization, had closed it out, we couldn't be able to go. So we had to keep moving fields and fields. And, you know, and it's frustrating for families, right? You know, they've got children, and some are in multiple sports. So I think that, for me, is what's been a bit frustrating. We've got a lot of land. Why can't we use it? And I'm all about sharing. Sharing's caring, and just being in community and working together. Not this is mine, you can't use it.
And how can people get involved with Kicks and Giggles? Where do you guys play? Where do you train? And where can people sign up?
Well, every class is free. We like everyone to try all the programs for free because we believe that it's a good program. And if it's a good fit for you and you enjoy it, you'll come back. If you don't, then, you know, well, that's fine. You go and find something, you know, what's more suitable for you.
Yeah. And then when they want to join, they'll either message us, they'll email us, or they'll call us or send us a message on Instagram. And they'll ask us about our program. And then we'll tell them where they can sign up is on our website. That's just so they can fill up the waiver, a little information about themselves. And we currently we've been playing at SDSU Mission Valley River Park. That there's a lot of fields over there, and it seems that everybody there is quite friendly to share the space.
Parking is a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah,
though.
Parking is a nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's San Diego for you, right?
There's a big parking lot as well. It's quite, why can't we share that?
I'm just kidding. What's your hope for the future? Where's Kicks and Giggles going to be a year from now or 2 years from now?
I mean, obviously, we want to grow and expand to much, much more people. We do know that a lot of people have not heard of us, and they will tell us, wow, I didn't know that this was existing 2-3 months ago. So I do think it will grow organically the way it did in Europe. In England, there's thousands of teams. They have a national team over there.
Yeah.
So as people hear about it, they'll grow. Because I think we have people from Seattle who have heard of us, and they've flew down many, many times to come play with
Australia.
From Australia, somebody came, because they have walking soccer there. So they simply just Google walking soccer to the destination that they're visiting, and they found us.
Well, I would love in the future, the end goal is just to have my own little, Kicks and Giggles have their own facility. I'd love it to be grass in an ideal world. And, you know, just provide a program for everybody. We have a friend who, you know, she used to be a nurse and she lost her limbs. And it's really hard. It hurts my heart to see that she wants to do things, but there's nothing for her. So me and Basma are just pecking our heads on, how can we make something for her? And then one of the ideas was, you know, like the ping pong machines back in the day. But having one of them where she hits one down, it extends her leg so she could still play. And then another one for, you know, maybe people who are on the spectrum too. So I think just having a facility and an organization and programs for everybody would be a perfect, because it's going to be fun and they're going to learn. And I think the community would be amazing.
That was Basma Oshiba and Chelsea Scholes speaking with KPBS Metro reporter Andrew Bowen. They are co-founders of Kicks and Giggles soccer program in San Diego. That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.
KPBS On Demand is supported by Splitero, helping homeowners pay for home improvements by offering streamlined access to your home's equity with no additional monthly payments or new debt. Splitero provides a lump sum payment in exchange for a share of your home's future value. Pre-qualification available at splitero.com.